I'm so excited to be here with you today and visit and do some networking before we get started. As you can see up there, we're going to talk about burnishing your brand. And what I want to share with you is that this is not just about burnishing your brand, but understanding the story of women that have done this and how you can learn how to do this for yourself. So where I'm going to start is how I've burnished my brand only over the last year. Now, I've been doing this much longer, but when I got ready for this event, I realized through photographs that over the last year, I have really picked up the opportunities to burnish my brand, and I'm going to share that story with you. And of course, my EMC friend walks in the room to make me nervous while I'm on stage. Thanks, Eric. Always good to see you here. But essentially, I'm going to talk about how I've done this, and then we're going to talk about other women in technology that have burnished their brand. In fact, it won't be just technology. It will be a lot of different industries. So let's get started. And then also, at the end of the day when I'm done, Terrell's going to come up here, and then she's going to really give you the keys to take this forward. Okay, so first slide. Thank you. Oh, I forgot to tell you about my other brand. I got a puppy about 6 months ago, and so now my brand is definitely associated with her. In fact, she loves purses. She stole one of my purses. I can't get it back. So now when I get home and I have my purse on, she just runs up to see if she can grab that one too. I think it's pretty funny. But I really like the one next to that, where I'm all dressed up in high heels and my Italian suit and racing after the puppy. So now my brand, personally and professionally, with you here today, is connected to my puppy, Misha. Great, so next slide. You always want to let people know what you do for a living before you start talking. So I work for EMC. I've been there for 13 years. I left after 6 months, a while back in 2000, and came back through acquisition. I went to work for Legato. So I always tell people, be very careful, particularly to my friend Eric there. At EMC, you can check out, but you can never leave. So it's a very good thing to share with you. But essentially, at EMC, I've had a number of different roles in the company, and I think that's very important. We've talked about that, the importance of not just doing one thing your whole life, but having different areas of the business that you could be involved in. And currently, I work in the Chief Technology Officer, and my role is to manage industry standards and strategic initiatives. And what is strategic initiatives? It's anything that I think is important that needs to be done for the company. And again, it's because of the brand that I've built that I've established that ability to do things that are very important to the company. I always say that I'm the out-of-the-box thinker and bringing those ideas in and then making sure that the rest of the company is involved with that and driving change. So as you can see, as I said up there, an agent of change. And I'm sure there's a lot of agents of change here too, so we'll hear your stories later. Next slide. So this is a little bit about my talk. We wanted to have the agenda up there. So starting with my leadership journey. And as I had said, then we're going to talk about women in different industries. We want to really understand what's going on out there. And the first area that we're going to talk about is media, then space, because you have to have a little bit of space in your media. Then we're going to have some food, because we've been up to space and in the clouds, and maybe we're hungry now. But then we're going to talk about sports. So different industries before we get back into technology to talk about women leaders there. Next slide. So where am I? This is October last year. I had the wonderful opportunity to be the leader of EMC's Innovation Conference. So this is where all of the ideas that have come together for EMC around innovation from different parts of the technology, also from areas like human resources and sales. And at the end of going through this innovation conference, they have a big event at a satellite location. And in this case, it was in Israel. So that's me in Israel hosting the innovation conference. And I have to tell you, it's my favorite point in time. In fact, a friend of mine said, it looks like I have a TED Talk going on there. Don't you like that great mic I have on? I keep that with me wherever I go, maybe sort of. So next one, so Innovation Conference last October, and what are we doing from the conference? So the idea is you have a conference, and it's a point in time. You're celebrating the value of those innovative ideas and recognizing the people that have won for that conference, so very exciting. But those are the people that can sit in the room. Innovation is much more important to a company than what you show in that room. You want innovation to be a market. So with the help of my friends in Israel, we created an innovation market. We brought in people from different industries, from different agricultural areas, people that were doing things in around innovation, automobiles, and brought them into the company so that people inside of EMC could learn more about innovators from different points of view and then start to spark their ideas of innovation. So we did this in Israel, and I thought it was such a great idea, especially when you see clowns like that standing up there. I brought it back to our corporate headquarters in Hopkinton. It was pretty amazing. The innovation conference happened the day after Sandy. Do you remember Sandy? The big storm back east? So the executive CEO that was the leader for the event, he was on the last flight that got to Israel, and I was on the first flight back to the States that went straight through to Boston. Got off the plane, did a little hair thing, washed up, and then jumped right in to the innovation market. In fact, it was really funny because we had videos from the innovation conference at the market. So here I am walking around in different clothes, and they're going, "What are you? You're up on the screen over there." So it just goes to show you that you can do anything if you put your mind to it. Of course, that night I had a long night's sleep. In fact, it was 2 days. Next slide. So because I was involved in EMC's innovation program, somebody thought that it might be good if I could also participate as a judge in Holt Prize. Is anybody familiar with Holt here? Okay, so this is something we would love to get you involved in. It's also an innovation event that happens at different universities around the world, in Singapore, in Paris, in San Francisco, all at the same time, where they are trying to solve a problem about socioeconomic things that are important that we need to solve in the world. This particular one that I was involved in was about food. So how do we make sure that food is available in many places around the world to people that are in different classes within their socioeconomic climate? So very exciting. So I was a judge at the Holt Prize, which was a lot of fun listening and deciding who should be the one. The one that we decided for there was to bring, to take bugs and then grind them up into flour and make that flour available in different places. So it was, we'll see if that wins. That was what we decided in the Boston part. Next one. Well, you know, once you start doing innovation, there are new opportunities that show up. And because I was in Israel, there was a new opportunity that came to me, and that's with Worcester Polytech Institute. They created a global entrepreneurship course, and I don't know how many universities have this, but essentially the students, while they worked on innovative ideas, all went to Israel together. And when they were in Israel, they got to go to all the big organizations and learn more about innovation from a different point of view and then bring those ideas back. Now, I have two people up there on stage, in the photo with me. One of them is a serial entrepreneur and another one's an attorney. Now, what are these guys doing there together? Well, I thought if you are going to learn about being a startup and what you want to do, it's also critical for you to understand that when you have a great idea, you better patent it or understand the legal ramifications of how to make sure that that idea is yours and that you can do something with it. So for that class that I had, I brought in the serial entrepreneur and the attorney. And of course, if you look very carefully, the attorney, the arrow is pointing at his mouth. Just something to keep in mind. There's more about that serial entrepreneur we're going to talk about later, because he's actually part of this presentation and you don't know of that yet. We'll get there later. Next slide. Mass Challenge. Anybody know about Mass Challenge? Okay. Yeah? Great. So this is the largest startup incubator in the world. They incubate over 1,200 ideas. And it is not just based in Massachusetts. It is a global program. In fact, they just partnered with Israel in terms of building out their program. And I thought to myself, Massachusetts, EMC's in Massachusetts. How can I make this bigger and more important? Because I want everyone to be involved in innovation. So I took on the role of being the alliance manager for the relationship with Mass Challenge. Now, there was no role. There was no job. It was no opportunity. It's just something I said, well, here's my new job. I'm doing this. I'm the alliance manager. And what does that mean? That I can invite everyone to participate as a judge, as a speaker, just to get involved in the startup community from everywhere around the world. So just always think about where you sit and what you touch and how you can influence other people and be more instrumental. So Mass Challenge is really getting a lot of interest for the company. Keep going. GRIP. Now, this is one of my favorite innovation programs. Now, you'll notice today I'm not talking a lot about the work that I do. I'm EMC's president, founding president of their Women's Leadership Forum on the West Coast. I wanted to really focus on innovation and what I'm doing there. But in that role as the president of the Women's Leadership Forum, I created something called Grassroots Innovation Program, bringing in leaders and innovators from different points of view to EMC so that we can learn about what people are doing outside and what we can do inside. And these are just some of the topics that we've brought in, you know, understanding how you can manage the ideas of what you're doing from an innovation perspective, and how art and water can create a better sense of things that we need to do in the environment to be more influential. So just different points of view. Keep going. Yes, and we would be remiss if we didn't think about what's going on here in the Bay Area. So there's an organization that's called the Association for Corporate Growth. And this is a group of people that have been very involved in acquisitions and mergers. And essentially, I'm on their board of directors, again, looking for new ways to bring other corporations and people in the community to understand how they can be involved in the startup world. Keep going. So what does this do? Where does this take us? You know, really think about it. We talked about this yesterday. This idea that our brand around what we're doing internally, externally, is very good. But unless people can see what you're doing, they don't know they're doing it. If people in this group here can see us today, but nobody else can see this discussion, it has limited impact. So what I've done is I've created a blog that's called Innovation Station. So really talking about people that are innovators out there. And what I do is I go around with my video camera, take videos of people, and then write stories based upon what they've said. That way I can remember what we talked about. And also, a blog should have some sort of visual component to it. It's much more interesting. And because I started doing that blog, which was just last November, EMC invited me to be one of their executives on the road. So what are the stories? What things am I doing out there? And how can I bring that in? So I'm part of EMC Reflections. Then you see this up there in the corner, connective behaviors that spur innovation. Just as we're doing today, I thought to myself, when you're at an event and you leave, how do you remember you've been there? So I partnered with Vook, which is a company that creates ebooks, to take the content, video, interviews, photographs, stories, and articles, and created the first ever book, ebook, book, online. So it captures the elements of those events, and anybody in the world can understand what we've done. So it's almost like commemorating what you've been in before. Very big and exciting. And so I've done this from a perspective of what I care about, and now getting the company to do this about what they care about. So very, very influential when you're thinking of new ways to bring the outside world in. And then, you know, really going forward, a book that a friend of mine wrote, she came up to me one day and she said, I'm writing a book on innovation. Can I interview you and maybe a couple of people at EMC? I said, why a couple of people? I'll get you 15. So I now share a place in that book with the most senior executives in the company side by side. And now we've taken the book and we've distributed it in a broad way. So again, taking opportunities that just seem good for your own brand, but connecting it with other people so that your brand is elevated and you are now connected with them in a very formal way. Very important to think about as you're going forward. Keep going. So, you know, just these are things about what I've done and what's important to me. And because of that, has anybody ever heard of the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals? Well, they're all throughout the world, but there's a very strong one here in the Bay Area. And what they've done is they created a mentor program. And the reason I'm bringing up the mentoring is because a lot of the discussions we've been talking about is how can we be more influential And when we're more influential, how can that influence our brand and the brand of the people that we're working with? And when you're involved in mentoring, and when it's external mentoring, people outside of your company, you become more influential through those other people and those companies that you're working with. So keep going on. So we can't stop with mentoring, because everybody now says mentor is one side. What about sponsor? Because sponsor is the other half of it. So all these sponsors of mine really thought that they're my sponsor and only my sponsor. I hope they don't all see this video. But I actually share that with everybody. And so what is my definition of the difference between mentor and sponsor? To me, a mentor is somebody that's working with you for a point in time, trying to solve something that's very important for you then and there, whereas a sponsor is now with you for life, because they have taken their reputation and aligned it with yours and your career and what you've done, and so therefore your long-term brand, who you are, is now connected to life, to that sponsor. Of course, I did include my husband down there, because he's a sponsor too. Just so you know, I'm not hugging and smiling, so with a new necklace with my sponsor. But I just wanted to share some of the photos of people that are very important in my life. Okay? This one's great. You know, here we are, we're at a big event. Joe Tucci, who's the CEO of EMC, is standing there. And I thought to myself, well, what if I just get up there and put my elbow where his is, and it'll look like it's just us, and we own this group. There's 500 people behind us. So I just kind of narrowed it in. He didn't even know that I was standing there, but it's one of my favorite photo opportunities. Keep going to the next one. And that's about 7 years ago. Well, this is my favorite of all the photos I've brought up so far. But essentially, Joe Tucci took a photograph chose to, because I was leading a very important women's program just a few months ago. So you can go from elbow where they don't know to a photograph where they're asking to be in it with you. And then this next one, I have to say, well, you have one president, why not have the other president? And this one is even more fun because RSA conference is part of an EMC event, and we brought in Bill Clinton. He actually wasn't looking at me. He was looking the other way, had somebody Photoshop it so that it turned his head and looks like I'm looking the other way and he's looking at me. So you can do a lot with your brand. Keep going. But now we want to move on. We want to take this to the next level, to where people are very interested in understanding more about other women. So we talked a lot about me. Now what I want to do is talk about women that are really well known, where you may have heard of them and they're important to you, and then talk about women in that same industry and why their brand has grown in a significant way. So we're going to go to the first one, which is around media. Now, when we first started, and I said to pay attention to the serial entrepreneur, that he would show up again, what you're seeing now are clouds. Those are clouds that take Twitter information or something that's on the internet and takes keywords out of those clouds to create information about the people that we're talking about. So the first one that you see up there is Oprah Winfrey. So essentially, if you took content in the internet about her, these are the keywords that would come up about her. And what we wanted to share about Oprah is a little bit about who she is today and how she's paying forward. And what we're going to do as we go through these slides and how these women have established their brands is to talk about what they did to establish it and now how they are paying it forward, because there's always two elements. When I talked about my brand is about what I do inside my company, but also how I'm paying forward to bring other people to the next level with me. So Oprah, we all know, is very well known. She created her own personal brand. It's very much about the media industry. But she also is very much involved in giving back through the community. And so we're all very familiar with her. But then when we move on to other women, and so the next one I'm going to ask, does anybody know who Kay Koplowitz is? See, there you go. Anybody familiar with satellite television? She is the founder of satellite television. So the way she started this is through sports. She created the first sports program on TV. It was about boxing. And she did this at a point in time where nobody was able to really communicate from satellite. It's when the Berlin Wall was up. It was that long ago. It's a very important person. She's really made an influence in our day-to-day life through what she has done. But she didn't stop there. She wanted to pay it forward. Does anybody know what Springboard is? All right. So now we're going to put on my glasses so that I can see this, because it's important that you really hear exactly what Springboard is. It's a venture capitalist organization that helps big businesses start small. So essentially, through coaching and showcasing and supporting women-led initiatives, Springboard has led over 500 women into accelerator programs, raising nearly $6 billion. Very important, very influential. 80% of those companies are still in place today. So again, someone in media, not Oprah, who's made a difference going forward. Let's go to the next one. Now we're going to go out into space. Anybody know who Sally Ride is? Okay. Sally Ride. Not only was she the first woman in outer space, but she was the youngest person to go into outer space. Very sad, because she died at the age of 61, and she died of pancreatic cancer. But she didn't just stop there, all right? So she was very important to the world, but she also was part of a new world going forward, and she gave back by creating the Sally Ride Space Camps, the Sally Ride Science Camps, to encourage girls to get into this industry. So does anybody know anyone that's gone to one of those classes? Pretty exciting. Now we're going to go on to someone else, also somebody very important, Mae Jemison. Does anybody know who Mae Jemison is? She is the first black woman to ever go into space. How did she do that? Where did she start? She actually started her career as a doctor. And when she was a doctor, she thought, well, this is okay, but it's not enough. And she went on to get involved in much more. She was in the Peace Corps from 1985 to 1987. And that's where NASA found her and asked her to become an astronaut. She became the first, as I said, black African woman to go into outer space. But she's paying it forward also. She's involved in what's called the 100-Year Starship Organization. And you'll get information on all of this later. But this is where she wants to ensure that going forward, that people get involved in science and education. So again, Sally Ride, Mae Jemison, two very influential women who have created their brand by doing something very different, but you didn't know who they all were. Let's go on to food. All right, Julia Child. Who knows Julia Child? Meryl Streep had a movie about her. She essentially brought French cooking to the U.S. When I was a kid, I remember watching her on TV and thinking, wow, is my mom going to stop making hot dogs for me? And when I get up tomorrow morning, there's going to be hot croissants in the kitchen? But of course, that never happened, because I still got the hot dogs the next day and cold bagels for breakfast. But she paid it forward also by creating a foundation around culinary arts. So a lot of money is going into that industry and driving that forward. Let's go on to the next one. Alice Waters. Does anybody know who Alice Waters is? If you're here, I hope you've eaten at her restaurant. So very interesting. The first person cooking very fat, lots of butters, lots of oils. And Alice Waters takes it to the next level, all about healthy eating, learning how to eat food from your garden. And she pays it back by putting edible programs for school children to learn how to eat better by eating organic foods from their garden and how to cook that. And for EMC, we did something similar, where we went into the school systems and sat down with the students as a group to learn how to teach these kids how to eat better. Very important to us. So keep going. Christy Yamaguchi. Anybody know who she is? Again, very famous, very well known. You know, the figure skating part is very important to her. But she created a foundation also called the Always Dream Foundation, which was established for one purpose in mind, which is to support organizations that have a positive influence on children, whether this is through computers or things that really help them get into the sciences. So again, very critical, pay forward after being influential from where you start. Next one. Does anybody know who Tara Vanderveer is? We're in the Bay Area, so you know there's probably people like that in many communities around the world, but she's been a basketball coach at Stanford University. And she's been very influential as a coach. And what is the biggest influence she had? She actually brought the American team to win a gold medal in basketball at the Olympics that were here in the US. So really very influential, but you really didn't know who she was. And how does she pay it forward? She created the Tara Hoops Summer Camp. So ensuring that other young girls can learn how to get into basketball also. Next one. So Judy Estrin, now we're in technology. And I really just wanted to stop here for just a moment. When I looked for a woman that was at the same level as Oprah, Sally Ride, Julia Childs, I really had a hard time finding someone in tech that was that well known that I could show up here and share with you. I mean, there are women that are in tech that are well known, but did they start their own company? Were they the founder to build that business? Did they establish that industry as the most senior woman? There are, but I think we should have a discussion about who those women can be and if they're starting here in this group where we can make it more influential so that we can bring other names up there. But Judy Estrin was pretty important. She was the first CTO at Cisco. In fact, last night I went to the Silicon Valley Visionary Awards and Padma Warrior won the award for one of the most innovative women, particularly in that visionary perspective. But essentially, Judy Estrin set the stage for other CTO women to come into the business. Keep going. And then I wanted to talk about a woman that maybe you don't know that well in technology. Has anybody ever heard of Orna? So how about the Startup Nation? Anybody ever read the book Startup Nation? So here's a woman, Orna Berry, who was the first chief scientist in Israel, where she managed over $500 million every year and created the first opportunity for startup communities to understand how they could get funding so that they could build their businesses and be an entrepreneur. So she really created the startup community for Israel and took that nation to the next level. And created that established relationship back to the US and other places around the world. And Orna Berry is who I worked with at the Innovation Conference when we just started. So she was my partner when we did that. So again, we're talking about people that are very innovative from different industries, different points of view, how they pay it forward, what's important, and how we can establish a brand as they have established their brand. Now we're going to go on to a different part of the presentation, where now we want to look at women that have been involved in giving back, so the social entrepreneurship. Has anybody ever heard of Kiva? Okay. So essentially, when we think about Kiva, that's the first place or the first community where we were using the funding that would happen through micro-lending, and essentially Jessica Jakely was a co-founder for that organization. And that we would be remiss if we didn't share one more woman that was in that industry. And that's Juliana Roddick, who, again, is a woman that is using technology to help people have better lives in different parts around the world. Now, I think, you know, we talked about different industries, but the social entrepreneurship, there really isn't enough focus on it. And I think, again, that's another area that we should think about as we go forward. So now we're going to talk a little bit more about these clouds. So if we want to bring up the cloud. My idea here today was when we put this presentation together that it would be photographs, and through photographs I could share stories. And then think about it from the external world, how we can take those stories and use clouds based upon what people are talking about through Twitter or through LinkedIn or just essentially out there in the outside world. And so what we've done is we've brought up clouds of people from different, that we've talked about just now, and when you talk about a topic of power, what the different things are that come up. So from power, you see a little bit about Oprah and what she's talking about. Lady Gaga, I come up because I do a lot of tweeting. There's leadership was another one that was very important where we thought that there was some good information on there. So essentially Alice Waters comes up and she presents her perspective on leadership. But then you also see Jessica Jakeley and what she's talking about these topics, as well as Mae Jamison, where you see information about her being a leader in the aeronautics industry. So when you think about burnishing your brand and presenting yourself from different points of view, you want to take the time to see how you can be more influential, not in just what you're doing, but how you're presenting it to new audiences, whether you're presenting it from photographs, as I started to do with myself, or how you're doing this with different technology. And this technology is here from Infamous. So I talked about that serial entrepreneur from before. This is his company, and I've now partnered with him to bring to you today a new way to showcase how we can learn about brands through the internet and through these different cloud words that represent people out there. So that's all I have to talk about from this discussion about building your and burnishing your brand. And again, later on this afternoon, you'll get key points on how to take that and do that for yourself. Now we'll go into the questions. My IBM friend.
Yes. So you had some great examples and some great stories of women who have had influence and then have used that influence to pay it forward.
Right.
What are some of the ways that we can do that when we don't necessarily already have that influence base built? In addition to Kiva, I love microloans. Are there any other things that you've seen or you've been able to mentor other women in companies or other initiatives that you've seen that might be good ideas for some of us to think about? Because I think paying it forward is important.
That's very good and a really good question. So, you know, when you think about it, what are you passionate about? What is important to you in your day job that will allow you to be more influential in the community that you live in? So that's where it starts. And when I think about being a judge for a startup community, so if you took an opportunity to participate in as a judge, then you would then be connected to those startups in some way. So that's one way. But I think the one that is actually easiest for all of us to do is to get involved in diversity organizations inside your company. Not only inside, but outside your company. Because the diversity organizations have foundational elements that you could represent yourself there. So for instance, the one that we have at EMC, it's very much around community and giving back. So we invite people to run events or programs like this, where then you become associated with that particular program, and then it's also associated back with your company. So you're building that internal brand and the external brand. So getting back to it, you don't have to be an officer in those organizations, because you often can't see, where do I have the time and energy to do everything that I'm doing in my day job, but still show up externally. So getting involved perhaps in a diversity program, or as we're here today in this conference at Usenix, getting involved in a program like this, where now you are representing your company and yourself, but you also have a conversation that you can have as you're working with people. In Silicon Valley, there's a lot of organizations. There are special interest groups that are for marketing, for technology, for different industries. So what you want to do is go into those groups and learn a little bit more about the people that are there, what are the types of people that are involved, and then use that as a platform for you to develop who you are and what you can do so that you become more influential. The whole point is make sure that you are outside your organization, not just inside the company, because what you find is that external network is the network that's going to make you more important internally. We talked a little bit about that. What I had found up until this past year is while I was building my brand, starting and doing a lot, the only people that knew about what I was doing were the people that were there. By creating a blog, now I can share everything that I'm doing. And people are now connecting to the stories and the situations and the events and programs that I'm involved in, as well as associating me with the people that I'm blogging about or the topics that I'm bringing up. So there's different ways if you're an introvert, perhaps writing and being part of a blog, your own blog, or getting involved in somebody else's blog and perhaps co-authoring one of them just to get your feet wet. Because if it's not something that you've done before, you need to get that comfort level to see that that's what you want. But I will say the blogging is very important going forward. I've seen inside my company, people get promoted because of the blogging, that external visibility that they have, what they're saying, the importance of it, and the value that it brings to the reputation for them and for their company. Does that help you? Good, great. And then we can always talk one-to-one.
Could you talk more about the process of moving into those areas that you're not working on, like you were noting, you know, moving into blogging or working with somebody else on something that you haven't done? When you get to that point where, okay, I've done all the things I have in my comfort zone, I know where I am, and I have to break out into something else, and I'm an introverted person. Can you talk a little bit about expanding into those new areas?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So it's very interesting. You know, my background is finance. I spent 12 years in the financial industry. I was an internal auditor, an external auditor. I was a financial analyst, a controller, and a CFO in a company. So that was kind of my foundation of what I am. And then I decided, you know, I need to get out of this because I'm not interested in this anymore. And I took a job on a hotline working for a software company. So can you imagine one day you're telling everybody what to do? You're the CFO. And the next day you're on a hotline going, computers don't break. What are you talking about? Oh, that key. I'll get back to you tomorrow. So you really, you know, I was very much outside my comfort zone. But what I found is to use kind of the basics of who I was, which is somebody that asks questions, wait till the end of the day, go build relationships with people that do know how to do this, and then partner with them so you can do something else. Just fast forwarded all the way to where I am today. I run industry standards for EMC. I've never worked in this part of the world before, and I didn't know why they asked me to do it when that's not my field of expertise. But essentially, they knew I knew how to create communities and have people collaborate together so that industry standards became more important for the company as a whole. But that's not something I chose. You're asking, how do you get into something that maybe wasn't your field of expertise before? And for me, what I do is I look for somebody that's doing something that I'm interested in and ask if I can participate on their team as a member of that team, not as a leader, but just as a member. And in that membership position, you're adding value because people are always looking for help. They want somebody to help them, but they also want a different perspective on that team, maybe somebody that has never done what they've done before. And if you're not comfortable asking the questions in that group, which I would suggest, I'm not always comfortable asking, you wait till the end and to the partner that brought you in, these are the things that I heard today. Can you help me understand more so that I can be better at what I'm doing? You know, I had a meeting with a friend of mine last night. She's getting involved in some new industries. And I said, you know, you can move up very quickly, but how can you move up if you don't know everything about what you're doing? So why don't you write down the things that you don't know about and then identify people that can help you in those specific areas of expertise, and that can help you grow and learn. So we're never really stuck in what we're doing. There's always an opportunity to expand, and sometimes those opportunities don't pay you any money, or maybe they take your salary backwards for a point in time, as I did with me, but really it gives you that broader perspective on how you can learn more and do different things and not get bored in your day-to-day job. I always believe that when all you do is the same thing every day, that you get stale. I know I do. And then doing other things as I'm starting to learn, I'm expanding and building new communities of partnerships that I can be more influential with. So really good question. I appreciate that. Other questions?
Do you have any insights maybe into the special challenges that women face in building their brand and anything that you can say? I mean, obviously we have some guys here and that's great, but you know, women in technology, special challenges that we face in any ways that you can think that women in particular might need to do something differently or more or, you know, less, however it might be.
Very good question. So there's a couple of things there. I mean, women communicate much, much differently than men. I mean, we tend to talk more when we want to get more out, and when we're talking, it may come across as a stream of consciousness. I know for me, sometimes that's true. So what they say is, and this is true for men also, is get specific sooner. You know, you just definitely want to get out what you want to say so people can hear you very clearly. And by doing that, they know what you want out of that conversation. So get specific sooner is really important. And then there's always the notion of how are you communicating? You know, I'm very short. I've got heels on right now, but I'm 5'2". And I always find myself communicating up because everybody's bigger than me. So what I ask people to do now is, can you sit down? And then I stay standing up because that gives me a little bit more sense of being bigger. And when you feel bigger, you actually look bigger to the person that you're talking to. So I would say a very good thing for anyone to learn, particularly women, is how your communication style is perceived in a group. So when you're in a group of people and you've left a meeting, have a partner that will tell you, how did you show up? What did you do or not do? Make sure when you go to meetings that you are participating in that meeting. Don't just be there. Ensure that your voice is heard, but that when it is heard, it has value in that room. It's very important. But essentially, you know, I would say in this world, I really feel that women create communities of collaboration, and organizations are becoming less and less hierarchical, and we really can be the people that can change that culture so that you hear voices from different points of view. We talked a little bit about Israel and the startup nation there. The reason why they were so powerful is because anyone at any level can make a decision when they're creating communities of innovation. In a hierarchical organization, you always feel that the person above you is the one that should be having the influence. You can have that influence by establishing yourself as part of that team member. Did that help?
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Very good. Other questions?
Women face a couple of challenges in computing. One is that we can be threatening if we're too good. Another is that we can be perceived as not knowing anything, even if we do. So between those two extremes, is there a risk of overbranding? Because then, wow, I'm the expert at this, look at me.
I have to be able to back that up, technically. I can't just say I'm the expert at something and show a bunch of branding that says that I'm this big expert if I'm really not, because somebody will call me out on it. So how would you address that?
Yeah, that's another really good question. One thing I would say is if you align yourself with others, so it's not just you showing up as the expert, if you are not the expert, then you can always defer to the other experts that are aligned with you in that particular. If you are the expert, then you better show up as the strongest, most capable, and talk about it from an I perspective. I have a team of people in industry standards that are the experts in that industry, but if I represent myself as them, then I can't lead and take them forward. But as I do that, I always ensure that people know that I'm the leader, but these are the experts that can answer those questions. So it's a fine line on how you represent what your field of expertise is, whether you're in the leadership role as the person that's driving that vision or that strategy, or if you're the person that has the deep technical skills. Over time, as you become more and more influential in an organization, you don't want to be the person that has the deep technical capability all the time, because then it's just about you and you can't advance if it's only about you. But if you are seen as a leader with other people with fields of expertise that are connected to the community that you're driving, then you do show up as the brand that you want for yourself. So there's different elements of branding. Sometimes you are the deep expert, and sometimes you're part of a community of experts to take the vision forward. Does that help, or did I not quite? You're asking one of the hardest questions. Of course you would ask me that question. But essentially, if you look at my brand around innovation, right, I can use that platform to be influential in other areas so that something that I'm really good at allows me to participate in things that I'm learning at about and that I'm more nascent in. But I know who I can get to for the other areas. Other questions? Thank you. It's great. Almost everybody has a question.
I have a question for you. So when I think about personal brand, it seems like there's this evolution that you go through when you're early in your career versus, you know, when you get more in mid-career and later. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about that? And it's kind of like, how should you think about representing yourself as you move through your career?
That's great. Another really good question. There are different elements to the different points in your career. When you're first starting out, you don't really have that platform of experience to showcase your skill set. So you may feel that, well, how can I have a brand if I haven't done a lot? But essentially, that brand can be somebody that wants to learn, or that brand can be that somebody that partners, or that brand can be somebody that is a change agent, somebody that's influential. I would say the college interns that I work with, I make sure that I help them build their brand and align it with mine so that they can go forward. So really, as you're moving on in your career, I would specifically say that find people that represent your vision of where you want to go, to bring up where you see yourself, and as you start to build those skill sets or that visibility or that influence, that capability, then as you go forward, you use that to branch it forward. I really bring it back to my background. I'm starting out in finance, getting into software hotline, business impact. I have my own business doing business re-engineering, just constantly using what I learned before to build out the capabilities going forward. But always be aware that you have a brand. Even if you don't think you have a brand, people are talking about you. Even if you don't think they're talking about you, just because you are part of an organization or a group, and if they're not talking about you, then is that good for you? How is that going to help you be more influential in the role that you're in and in the company that you're living in, and certainly in the community and the global world that we're in right now? So very important to always think about, what is that brand, who am I, and take that forward with you. And I personally believe that, as we've said, having that business impact and that skill sets should be connected to paying it forward, finding ways to be involved in community programs that allow you to really have both sides of you so that you're a little bit more balanced. Is that, thank you, great. Any other questions? Thank you.
You mentioned about staying back and getting things done. I really second your idea on that, where you get a lot more things done. Staying back a little later, connecting to other folks, which not only helps you progress forward, but it gets you going and more involved in the company. But where does this whole concept of life, work, home balance stand? Personally, from what I've seen in my years of experience, there's nothing like that. But I just wanted to hear your view on that. Thank you.
There's no such thing as work-life balance. I mean, I travel a lot, and I am, you could tell, I mean, am I home? My puppy knows who I am, but my husband certainly doesn't. Puppy knows me by smell. He's going, who is that woman that just came home? There really is, and that's for men and women, there really is no work-life balance, but at different points in your life, you want to invest more in other areas that are important to you. This point in my life, I'm investing in being visible. This last year, ensuring that my visibility is growing externally. There's been points of time where I'm raising a child, and that child has more of my time than anybody else. So, we have to decide and make the decision that that's what we're doing at that point in time, and when to connect back in to be involved. Work-life balance also went away with the internet, right? Because I don't know about you, but my phone, I have multiple devices to make sure I can always connect, no matter where I am in the world. But it also allows us to learn more and be more involved with people from a global perspective and not the narrow approach that I may have had, because all I could see was what was in front of me many years ago. But yeah, no such thing, kidding. You were right. Yes.
So as a technical person, a lot of my brand building is based on show, don't tell. So instead of talking about how I'm awesome at something, you do create some blog post that explains something, or you build a library, or you do something that demonstrates. How do you demonstrate leadership instead of just telling people you're good at leadership?
That's also a very good question. If your style is show, don't tell, then you should partner with somebody that tell and show, has the other side of what you have. Because that will allow you to be more comfortable in what you are doing. So it's really then through that partnership and ensuring that that person won't take what you're doing to represent themselves. But in that situation, it becomes much easier. And then through that partnership, you start to learn how you can communicate what you're doing. So you may do that on a couple of projects, and then based on that experience, figure out how does that become something you can do independently, and maybe that partner that you built will help you by giving you that feedback. We can't do this by ourselves, none of it. I mean, I, believe it or not, at one point in my life was very shy, but it didn't get me anyplace. And I also was always the person that had my head down trying to get things done so people could see what I was doing. And ultimately, that also didn't get me anyplace. So I realized I have to say what I'm doing. And when I have a success, I make sure other people know about that success. And I don't just let it, people that I know in my direct organization, I'm much more broad about it. And today, with things like newsletters and blogging and the internet, Facebook, LinkedIn, I can really show up a lot more. But I always make sure that it always represents the same brand that I'm doing. So if I use Facebook, I'm not using Facebook to talk about what I'm doing. I'm using it to talk about innovation, leadership, women's programs, so that it's a consistent message about who I am. If I'm not consistent about it, then people will get confused about who are you and why do I want to work with you and what's the investment or the payback that they get. Did that help? You want to partner on that? I'll help you. Eric.
I just wanted to make a comment because it came up the second time, and I think it was bothering me when you were answering Carol's question. I think that there's so much talking and not doing today that everybody just discounts what people are saying. And so that means that if people aren't saying that they're good at leadership, they must be even worse, right? Because everyone says, oh, they're good at X, at Y, and Z, right? And then you have to look at the results to see if it's actually true. And so then someone who isn't saying that they're good at X, you know, you go almost, I mean, maybe it's meant to short, I know, whatever, you're making an assumption. And so I think that the show don't tell is really the key to this, because I've seen this in my career all the time. There's so much talking and so much thing that goes on. Ultimately, results are what matters, right? And sometimes it takes a while for people to notice, and there's a lot of talk about the talk that other people are doing. But at the end of the day, the results do win the day.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're focusing on that result and making sure that you're being heard when you do have results, right? I think that's the key, rather than, you know, being heard ahead of time and then following up results rather than being lost.
And that's a good point. It is results driven. So when you're showing or you're talking about it, it's when you've executed. You don't necessarily talk about what you are going to execute unless you need people to support you along the way. You build those partnerships. But as Eric just said, you better show up with something that is of strategic value that showcases what you're capable of. And a very good example is, again, that completing it, making sure that it represents the vision and the strategy of the company that you're working for. Because if it doesn't represent that, then it's just about you, and nobody will care about what you've just achieved, essentially. Thanks, Eric, definitely.
Yeah, what you said kind of leads into a question that I was gonna ask, which is, you're telling us to do all this with branding, but women often suffer from imposter syndrome, more so than men, because some men do too, so how do you overcome that so that you can actually say that you're good at something when you are, as opposed to being worried about saying something because you might not be able to back it up?
And that's proven, actually. I was talking to Deloitte a few weeks ago when I was in London, and they did a study of women. They're trying to figure out how to get more women out of college to go work for Deloitte Consulting, because they found that they were getting more men in there, and they were trying to change what that looked like. And what they found was that women won't apply for the position until they've completed their career and they have something under their belt. The men would apply a year to two before they graduated and start talking about the kit that they could go get the job done. It's also proven that men will get promoted more quickly because they will put their name in for a job or a role something they have never done before, and then just say that they can go do it. And women won't really even consider going after that job until they know they can do it. So essentially the men get the new roles and the women maybe not be able to. But I think it's actually important that women do feel that they are want to make sure that they can do something first. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You do want to feel that comfort level and bring more capability to the role and the job. So again, it comes back to talk about things that you know you've executed at, and those are the things that will showcase your brand. Don't talk about things that you haven't quite finished, because there won't be any comfort for you there. But perhaps by really letting people know what you've done, when you've achieved it, or setting the stage so that when it is done, they are listening, that it gets the respect and the positioning that you want it to have. So these are all, they're not easy. These are trial and error, just going out there and taking one step forward so that you can start to do it. I never ran an innovation conference before. How do you do it? You work with people that did it. But when you work with them, you give them equal footing. So it's not about you when you're learning how to do it. It's about people that are doing it together. And then when you have a new opportunity, you can bring those skills in as an expert at that point in time. But certainly not the first time you do it, because then it looks like you're trying to take the reputation from the people that have already been respected in that space. Branding is, as we're all talking about, it's a very sensitive area. You want to build it in a way that you're comfortable with, but in a way that really will allow you to show up as you're developing your career going forward. More questions? Nobody's given me an easy question yet. How about an easy question? Green.
I just want to make a comment, because in talking to women about presenting at conferences, which is something that I'm always trying to do, is get more women to present at conferences, I hear that they don't want to because they don't want to represent the gender. It's the same thing with women stepping out and trying to look like the expert in something or trying to assert they know something, whereas a guy will say, I kind of 60% know that. So I'm good enough, I can apply for that job, I'm gonna ask for that promotion. A woman's like, yeah, 60% is not good enough for me. They don't wanna be the one that represents the gender and does it badly. So they don't wanna speak at conferences, they don't wanna throw their name in the hat for a promotion, they don't wanna apply for a job, because if they're the one woman that does that and they fail, then, oh, now we can paint all women as not being good or not being as technical. And then there's the other side of that, which is if they do present, then people will say, oh, they only picked her because they needed diversity. So I think we still struggle with getting ourselves out there and speaking up and branding ourselves, because there is that risk that we represent the gender, I'm the one token female.
Well, that's why I think when we speak, we should speak about business topics and not about diversity. So when I said I run EMC's Women's Leadership Forum, my vision is to make EMC the center of leadership and innovation through the eyes of women. That's not about women's leadership. That's about leadership and innovation and a woman's perspective to take that forward. When I talked about the things that I've been doing over the last year or so, they weren't about diversity. They were about things that are impactful from a business perspective. So when a woman is selected to speak an event, what they should be talking about, as they have at this event, almost all of the topics have been about what we do for a living. So I see the value of it here. But again, when I started the Women's Leadership Forum, there are many women that said, I don't want to be part of that. Why would I want to go to a women's event? I don't want to be singled out as a woman. I'm part of a bigger community. So that's why it's important to make sure that the topics are topics that both men and women are interested in, and that there becomes a partnership between men and women in those programs so that we're both at the table together and that they become part of our teams and not just us part of their teams. You have a lot of great comments. They're very passionate comments. I love to speak at events, but
So my question is a little bit different, so I apologize if it's sure. going to come up later in today's discussion, but I'm a recruiter. That's what I've been doing for the last 17 years, and getting more women interested in technology and getting them committed through every stage of their life cycle is really important to me. There's a lot of individuals who've gone off and done military assignments. There's individuals who've left the workforce because they chose at that moment in time to have a family, and now they want to come back. How can I help even just my own employer to embrace that these women deserve an opportunity even though they haven't been in the workplace all this time? Any advice you have, anyone in the room that might have ideas, I'd be very open to hearing them.
Yeah, no, those are good questions. So again, I would say, if you think about it, women do take time off when they have children. A lot of them choose to. And when they come back, oftentimes the only role that's offered to them is an executive assistant, or which isn't a bad role. Actually, it's a great role, because then you learn about everything that that executive's doing in the company, and you can be more impactful. I have a good friend that's here in this room today that started at a company that, as an executive assistant, has now moved into the sales role and could ultimately become the CEO of that company. So that's a place to start. So I would say, when you're interfacing with these women that are coming back into the workforce, offer them something where they can learn and feel comfortable about their knowledge of the people and the community that they're getting involved in, so that they can start to see what is it possible for them. Another thing that I do is I take women out for, spend a day with me in my job, or spend a day with somebody in sales in their job. Bring them into that organization for a day or two in different functions and roles, so that they can get a sense of what's going on in business today and where they may fit. We've talked a lot about program management. Women liked, at least the women that I work with, liked this feeling of accomplishment, that they can start something, own it from beginning to end. And oftentimes, program management puts you in a situation where you're involved in very critical elements of a business, but you're seeing it from a perspective of, it's more of a program, and not, you don't have to understand the technology. So that, those, I think, are some possibilities.
Just speaking to that, on the technology side, it's actually one of the things I found helpful talking with women. There's been a recent interest in some of my circles about this, about women coming back into the workforce, is that right now there's a bunch of new technologies that no one really knows. And so picking one of those up, finding there's a bunch of groups that have sprung up, things like the Hacker School in New York. There's three or four of them here. Some of them have scholarships available because companies are using these as ways to recruit. If you're trying to convince your company, getting them to sponsor one of these programs is a great way to get your name out there, because then people start to think of your company as someone who's associated with giving people a chance, basically. But for a lot of things in technology, the best way to get involved is to do something, anything. Attend a Hackers Weekend, which can be challenging because it's mostly guys, and it's a room full of guys staying up really late at night. But on the other hand, at the end of the weekend, you'll have something you can show employers. And that was certainly part of how I got my current job, because it shows that you can learn new things, you can pick things up. And right now, the requirements for someone doing development are, they're probably not out of date if you've ever done any of it before. And there are things that you can pick up outside of traditional education, because the education system didn't produce enough developers. And so that there are other ways around, and just being, there are still employers that look for those traditional education pathways, yes, certainly, but they don't have as many people to choose from. And so if your company is still one of those places that really cares about hiring programmers with a master's degree, you can probably go and find the people who are really frustrated trying to find programmers with master's degrees and talk to them about giving some other people a chance and finding people where they can sort of reach outside of where they're currently at.
That's great. And I would also add to that is, if you think about it, writing skills are really valuable today. So if somebody has a writing background, the capability of doing a lot in that area, they would be great people to come in and do product marketing, because they're taking these abstract ideas and creating content from it. I talked to somebody at VMware who was an executive there and said, the technical people that I hire to do product marketing, it's just bits and bytes, and I never can really get the message across about what our technology is doing. So I want to bring in a bunch of English majors, because they can write much better than they do. Put them in a room together, and so they can start to deliver that message. So again, looking at people from different backgrounds and bringing them into technology opens up doors that you didn't think about before. But I really think we need to rebrand IT and make it something that's much more interesting. And you know, if we talked about it, about design, if you just put the word design in there, I think more women would be interested in. And I would say today, there are men that aren't so interested in technology anymore. I work for a storage company. I think people would rather go work in something that's very much, much more closely related to the end user as opposed to the infrastructure. So how do we make this more sexy and interesting? We have to rebrand just the industry that we're in to make it more interesting to others. Did anybody else have any other input to that question? Yeah, go ahead. You want to come up and, yeah.
So I actually had this personal experience myself. I faced this myself 12 years back when I decided to take time off for my older son. I just then finished up school. I had like a couple of years of experience and I said I'm going to take some time off because I wanted to be the perfect mom trying to raise a kid. But when I went back after 2 years, it was not an easy experience. I'm a software engineer. People were, okay, you're completely out of this line of profession, now where do you stand? I mean, what have you done the last 2 years other than raising a child? That was an open-ended question I had, actually. Open question, they asked me on my face. So I took what I could, it was not at the level where I was, but what I did was, over the next 6 months, I took some additional courses. You know, right now we have a lot of these universities, online universities.
Nobody
which are,
can really hear you, so I'm just going to move that. Yeah, so you can talk to her and still. Yeah, okay. There you go.
So what I did was, I took some online courses. And we have a lot of these extension courses that are being offered from UC Berkeley Extension and various places. I supplemented myself with those to make myself stand better. And 6 months when I applied out there, I had a lot of opportunities available, so I got back where I started, or where I left off, actually. So I think one thing is to continue, even when people are taking time off. I mean, right now I have people coming to me asking, I'm taking time off. My advice to them is, you're taking time off for something, but it doesn't hurt. You know, attending one of these courses, it is maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, but it keeps you alive. It keeps your resume alive. So that's the advice I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Yay.
If you have influence in the company that you work in, I would just strongly recommend a couple of things. So one of the best way to find these opportunities for women as they, you know, take time off for children or to take care of their parents, I mean, the sandwich generation, I mean, the whole thing, right? Invest in programs to make it easier for them to come back. You know, I mean, that's recruiting is one thing, but retention, you've already got highly qualified people, very talented, and when they come back from taking a leave of absence, there are a lot of corporations that just aren't very friendly to that. And so figure out how can you re-recruit from the talent pool that you already have. My other suggestion is if your company doesn't already have this, but really invest in part-time offerings and job sharing. Because when you think about anytime you need to take an extended leave, there's this, you kind of have to phase yourself back into it, you know, and you're juggling the life that you took the time off for and the new job opportunity that you're coming back into. And so the more the company can help you reassimilate, if you will, that will be a highly attractive place for you to go. So as a job opportunity that you're looking for. So those are two suggestions.
So one other thing I want to say, there's been research that shows that the job descriptions often appeal more to men than to women, so you might want to have the women engineers in your company rewrite some of the job descriptions because they found how it's worded has an impact on who gets attracted, and very often they're written in a way that are as hyper-technical, no human contact, you're going to be in a hole by yourself, when in point of fact the job may not be like that. So look at how those descriptions are done. Somebody made the point, when women, because so few companies are amenable to having women coming back, companies that are willing to do it are much more likely to get women who will A, come back, and B, will stay. So that's something to think about. In terms of accommodating for flexible work, I just read a very interesting article. Medtronic has a new office up in Santa Rosa. They reconfigured it to encourage having people do more telecommuting, making it a more flexible environment so that people could stay or people could come back into the work environment. They spent $800,000 to do that. They saved that much in 6 weeks because of the less space that they needed, et cetera. And they've also found that that tends to increase employee engagement and increase employee happiness, which is becoming an increasing issue. So some other thoughts to think about.
It's really interesting around job descriptions. Even when I've been hiring, I've always been given a job description from my HR manager, and I've had to go in and rewrite that job description to get the kind of people that I want. And then I'll look on the web, and a similar role that will be filled will have that job description that was originally given. So really, the HR person is helping me by giving me something, but it's up to me to change that. They certainly don't know what the real things are that I need. So I think there's an education point that you can give to the managers and the leaders in the company so they know that their role is to write that job description to represent what they want to get the kind of people they want to bring in. Yeah. Great.
Well, I wanted to thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it. It's been great.